Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Update your home with Palmero Vinyl Plank Flooring. It provides a genuine, weathered wood look that complements any decor and clicks together for easy installation. It's waterproof, scratch and dent resistant, making it perfect for active households. Save big money on our wide variety of flooring options at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Today on The Grave Talks, a paranormal trifecta, a conversation about the Cambry House and Farm. In 1850, Adolph Cambry and his family moved to Nauvoo, Illinois as part of the Icarian community. The idea was to form a utopian society. However, he decided to leave that community, and in 1867, he built his family home. Four generations of the Cambry family lived in the home for more than 100 years. It was built on a limestone bluff overlooking the Mississippi River and has a mineral spring running underneath the property. It's like a paranormal trifecta. The Cambry House and Farm is now a wedding venue and is filled with activity even when no one is around. You can hear footsteps and doors open and close on their own. There seems to be a spirit of a young girl residing in the house, and a woman's apparition has been seen watching over the weddings that now take place on its grounds. Could it be that the family was so tied to the property that they never left? Could members of the Cambry family still be together in their house? Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about the Cambry House and Farm with owner Rebecca Williamson. So, Becca, I'm really excited to talk to you today about the Cambry House and Farm. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Now, it's in Nauvoo, Illinois, which right. I've been to Nauvoo before. So I found,
So I found
this really interesting because when I saw Nauvoo, I assumed this was a Mormon family at one point, but the Cambry family, they built this house in like 1867 or something like that.
So the Cambry family came to Nauvoo in 1850 as part of the Icarian community. So the Icarians are, they came after the Mormons, the Latter-day Saint Church, to form a utopian society in Illinois. So Etienne Cabet was the guy who created the Icarian faith, or it's not really a faith, it's not really a religion, but he created the Icarian community. And it was basically the original hippie commune. So you sold everything you owned, you donated it to the community. They lived in one room apartment complexes, and they all lived together, worked together, ate together. They had a big dining hall, and the Icarians are actually the longest running communal society, non-religious communal society in the United States. They were active until 1899.
So I just assumed that when they moved there that the family was Mormon, but not at all. So how long did they stay with the Icarians? Because apparently at some point they branched out and built their own house.
Yeah, they were with the Icarians for a few months.
Oh, not long at all.
Yeah, not very long. And when you look at the Icarian history, most of the people who joined the community only lasted for a few months there. Then there are a lot of reasons for that. Well, number one, people don't go very long without owning anything, you know. Mm-hmm. at some point, people want to own things. And number two, it was birthed out of the French Revolution, and a lot of the people who started the community were French noblemen
who had never done anything in their lives. And then they come to Nauvoo and they're suddenly expected to work, but they don't know anything, how to do anything. And then you get people like the Cambrys, you know, Adolf Cambry was a cabinet maker and, you know, he built homes in the area and stuff like that. So, you know, and there was a big disparity of abilities to to work.
I find it so interesting. What is it about Nauvoo? Because at one time, Nauvoo was considered Zion for the Mormons.
It's really interesting that, you know, this has been an area where several cultures had like this mm-hmm. utopian society here. And, you know, the Mormons were here for 7 years and the Icarians were actually here in Nauvoo for 7 years as well. And it's just interesting. The synchronicity of that, that they were both here for around the same period of time. And then it was a Native American village before that. And the, you know, it's just kind of, Nauvoo has just such a rich, deep history of interesting stuff.
It really does. And it has the most fantastic Mormon temple there. It's huge, you know,
Beautiful. Oh, so beautiful. That Joseph Smith built a temple here in 1840. It was hit by a tornado and burnt to the ground in the 1850s. And then they rebuilt the temple around 2000. So it's a new building, but it's modeled after the old building. But it is very dramatic when you come up the hill and
it
see
really
this
is.
Big, gorgeous white temple right there.
It's quite beautiful. So the Cambry family, they end up buying some property, and Adolphe. He ends up building this house. And the house today looks like it's in remarkable shape.
It is in an incredible shape. So he bought the property that I own today in 1860. They lived in a one-room cabin while they were building the house that stands there today. It was completed in 1867. And yeah, I mean, Adolf Cambry was an incredible cabinet maker. He built 5 homes at least in the area and schoolhouses and apartment complexes. And just, he was just an incredible craftsman. And the Cambry family did remarkable work of, you know, keeping the home up while they lived in there. And then they sold the home in 1979, and my grandparents bought it at that point with the intention of preserving the home and the history of the home. So,
oh, I love that. So they just didn't want it to be torn down or anything. They wanted to save it. I love that.
Yeah, my grandmother, it was a working apple orchard from the 1850s until the 1940s. And my grandmother had gone out there as a little girl to pick apples. So she had some like really fond memories of being out there. And then when it went up for auction, she's like, I really kind of want to buy it. And my grandfather wasn't as certain about that, but they went out there and looked at it. And it was exactly the way my grandmother remembered it from being a little girl. And my grandfather fell in love with it, and they bought it at that point. They loved history and they loved antiques, and this was kind of an extension of that love of history and antiques. So they just kind of treated it like a museum, like a full-size dollhouse.
Oh.
And they filled it with antiques and just kind of kept it as original as they could.
But they didn't move into it?
No.
So it was more of just a place where they stored their valuables? Did they have people come, like open it like a museum? Or did they just have it for themselves?
A little bit of both. So every fall, they would have a big open house. It was a craft show open house where they'd fill the house with crafts. And people would come out and look through the house and buy craft items from other people. And then that was a really big deal for about 10 years. And then we had family gatherings and events out there too. So the rest of the time we were doing family things out there. And usually if it was a really nice day and we were all getting together, we ended up out at the farm.
So you've grown up there too.
Yeah. Yeah. They bought it when I was four. So I have spent a lot of time out there. And that was kind of like when, after they passed away and we were kind of discussing what to do with it, I decided to buy it to kind of help preserve their history and mm-hmm. my memories out there.
What I think so interesting is that the house was with the Cambry family for over 100 years and your family. So in all of this time, it's only been two families have lived in this house. In yeah. multiple generations. I think I read the Cambry family was four generations lived there and now two of your family. But I just find that so interesting. I guess that would be three of your family since grandparents had it. But then it went right to you. But isn't that right. interesting that, you know, there is a house that I talked to on this show in Missouri. And in not even as long, I think it might have been built more in the 1880s. 26 different families have lived in that house. And so when you right. look at your house, that's to me amazing. It says a lot about it.
Kind of remarkable. And that's why the home is so unique, is that it has not been significantly remodeled since it was built. Like, it's still the original floor plan. All the woodwork is original to when the home was built. Even down to the windows are the original hand-blown glass from the 1860s wow. when the home was built. So it's really unique that this home has remained basically almost identical to the way it was when it was built.
Is it true that when your grandparents bought the house, it was still set up with the outhouse outside?
Yes.
There was no indoor... bathrooms.
There was no running water in the house.
And this was in the 1970s. So it was, people definitely had bathrooms and indoor plumbing.
They did. They did have bathrooms and indoor plumbing in the 70s, but yeah, not at the farm. They did have electricity in the house and a furnace, but it was still the outhouse and they had a well water that they were using. My grandparents added running water and bathrooms inside the house. That was the major update that they made, was adding the running water in the bathroom. But my grandma didn't want to change anything in that house that she didn't have to. So they didn't want to change the floor plan or alter it. So they had taken an attic area and remade that into the bathroom. And so if you ever go to the house, you see when you get to the top of the stairs, you see this weird little angular room, and that's the bathroom. And everybody's kind of like, oh, that's interesting. it's definitely unique, but that was because my grandparents didn't want to change anything out there. Around 2000, the stairs got a little bit too much for my grandma, and so they put a second bathroom in downstairs, but they kind of tucked it into the corner of the downstairs bedroom, so it's really inobtrusive, but we do have two inside bathrooms now. It could be lived in. I choose not to, just because I have, you know, kids and cats and dogs, and it's just not, it's really more of a museum than a house.
And it would feel like you're living in a museum, I would
yeah,
think.
Yeah, it would. I'd be terrified. I would be terrified the whole time I lived there, you know, and just not, you know, when you have a family, it's kind of, kids are rough on things.
Right.
Kids are rough on things. And I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that.
Are there many things left in the house that were original to the house? Maybe the Cambry family had some...
He was a cabinet maker, so he built like all the furniture that they had in the house. I believe he made himself. I have a few pieces, not everything. So, you know, I mentioned that the home was sold at auction, and a lot of the things in the home were sold out of the house. My grandparents bought an apple bench, and I have that. And then there was a big cabinet in the downstairs bedroom that was sold when the house was auctioned off. And then when people found out what my grandparents were doing, it was donated back to the house and came back. And then after I bought the house, actually last year, I had some of the Cambry descendants reached out to me, and there is a huge dry sink that Adolph Cambry made that they donated back to the house.
I love that.
Yeah. One of the descendants was going into the nursing home, and they were debating about what to do with this, and she decided it really should come back to the house. And so I was able to get that back.
When you lost your grandparents and you decided to buy it, and I'm sure there was a lot of emotion that went into that decision, because you, I'm assuming, like most of us, loved our grandparents very deeply and wanted their legacy to live on because you knew how much they loved this house. But were you at a point like you did it out of love and because you wanted that connection with them? And then was it like, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with it? Or did you know?
It was kind of a crazy time. My grandmother passed away. She'd had a stroke, and she'd been ill for about a month before she passed. And then after she passed away, 2 weeks later, my husband had a heart attack and passed away.
Oh my gosh. I am so sorry. I was not expecting that.
It was a really rough time. And so in the middle of all my grieving process with that, they were trying to figure out what to do with this house. And they're like, and we had a realtor come in, and she's like, oh my, she's like, this is going to have to be completely gutted and remodeled if anybody plans on living in this. That idea was not something I was okay with, especially in the midst of all this grief that I was going through at that time. I was just like, well, I am not going to let that happen. And so I bought it. And, you know, when you're in the middle of deep grief like that, you do some kind of crazy things. And I bought the farm in that. So I really had no idea what I was doing with it, other than I wanted to preserve it. I wanted to preserve it, kind of keep my grandparents' memory going. My husband loved it out there too. And so it was kind of like, we'll keep his memory going. And so here I am sitting with this 3-bedroom house that I am not going to live in and trying to figure out what to do. I had some cousins that got married out there over the years. So we'd had about 2 to 3 weddings at this point. And I decided, you know, if we've had a few weddings, we can do more weddings. And so the original idea was to open it up as a wedding venue. And so I opened it as a wedding venue in 2017.
And I've seen pictures of people's weddings, and it is a beautiful wedding venue.
It really is gorgeous. We've got 2 really large lawns. The house sits in the center of these large lawns, and then it's completely surrounded by trees out in the middle of nowhere, basically. And it really makes for some gorgeous wedding pictures.
And it really does look like you've stepped back in time when you see the property. In fact, I was reading somewhere that there's a trail around on the property that was an original stagecoach route.
Yeah. So there's a trail that comes up right beside the house, and that was part of the stagecoach route in the 1860s. In fact, it was a stagecoach route until 1921 is when they closed that stagecoach road. And so my long driveway was a road until 1921, which is why Google Maps still lists it as a road.
It's a driveway.
It's really a driveway. But they put the 2 brick pillars at the end of the lane and a gate when they closed off the road to discourage people from using it.
And I also get why, you know, with all the grief you were going through, losing that property would have been one more thing that you'd be losing. You know,
yeah, I
get that connection.
could not lose one more thing. That was exactly right. I could not lose one more thing. And I just was not gonna do it.
Now, what I thought was interesting was that you've been doing the paranormal investigations there for a long time.
We started doing it our first year that we were open. I had actually been a paranormal investigator since around 2003. I'd always had an interest, and I got my friends bought me a ticket for a ghost tour in 2003. And so then I've been investigating ever since. I had never really thought about this property being haunted. And when I bought it, it was the furthest thing from my mind. And I always tell people, you know, when you grow up with something, you don't necessarily think of it as haunted or anything like that, especially, you know, when your family is not like into that sort of thing. I mean, in the 80s, none of us thought anything was haunted.
Right.
You know, after I bought it, I'd spent the night there, and we were hearing footsteps and doors opening and stuff like that while we spent the night there. And so I had a friend who was forming a paranormal team right around that time. And so I reached out and said, you know, do you want to come in and investigate this? I think I might have activity going on. And they did. And we had a ton of activity during those investigations. Those very first ones, we had a lot of activity. And I have a friend who owns a paranormal tour company, in fact, the one I went on for my very first ghost tour, I made friends with him. And he suggested that if we're having activity, I should really host a ghost tour. And so we did, you know, the very first year we hosted a ghost tour, and it was amazing. Like, we're having all kinds of activity on like every tour, and everybody was enjoying it. And the first year we were open as a wedding venue, we didn't have a single wedding, but I had ghost tours, and the ghost tours were super successful. So it was kind of like, oh, well, this is interesting.
It's helping me financially anyway.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Like, the ghost tours were what kept the farm going before I started to have weddings. Weddings, you know, they're planned like a year out. So it takes a little while for a wedding venue to get
right off the feet. I think it's interesting, though, when you were a kid, you didn't experience any activity there. But then again, it wasn't like it was your grandparents' home. So it wasn't like that's where you went to spend time with them. You know, you probably went there maybe during the day and left.
Yeah, we always left at night. You know, when it started to get dark, we all went home. I didn't think that was odd at all. I mean, that wasn't like something that we really talked about. But, you know, when it was dark, it was time to go home. We all just went home at dark. You know, I hadn't really spent the night out there. And again, my grandparents lived like 10 minutes away. So when it was night, we went and we slept in their house. And so this was, after I bought it, was really the first time that I'd spent the night there. Looking back on it, we were having activity, but they always just chalked that up to being an old house. It's an old house. Doors open and close in old houses, you know.
Which really, you know, let's think that through. You know, it's funny because you do tend to explain it that way. And sometimes grandparents will explain it that way because they don't want to scare you. But doors don't open and close in old houses. You know, it's like, well, it's just settling, or it's not very level. But open and close makes no sense. Like, the whole house would have to shift for something to open and close.
Right, exactly. And like, this basement door opened so often when we were kids that they would have one of us grandkids stand by the door during those craft shows to keep it shut, because it would open all the time. And like, going back at it as an adult from a paranormal investigator standpoint, you know, I'm like, okay, is it a draft or is it a ghost? And I have tried and tried to make that door open by, you know, like creating a draft, opening and closing other doors in the house, seeing if it's loose, you know, like if you walk across the floor or something like that. I have never been able to make that door open on its own. Like, nothing I am doing is making the door open. but it still opens on its own regularly.
And does it stay shut for a while and then just randomly open? Or is it kind of you shut it, it just immediately opens?
You shut it, it will stay shut, and then it opens periodically. I mean, it's just, it's not like even like,
yeah, so that doesn't even make sense. Because if you shut it and it just doesn't stay open, well, that's a door that for some reason it doesn't latch properly. It's, you know, maybe it's kind of in there incorrectly.
It'll be shut. It'll be latched. I'll pull on it. Can't get it open. Like I'll try and jiggle the door to open it. That doesn't happen. But I've been standing there in the kitchen since I was a kid and watched that door open.
And as a child, I think it's kind of adorable. You just were like, oh, it's just the door that never stays shut. Never thinking anything more about it.
That door doesn't stay shut. It's an old house.
And when you think back, there was probably quite a few things that had happened in the house that it's old house. You know, you're hearing footsteps. I don't know what that's just the floorboards creaking upstairs.
Yeah. And then, you know, the attic door, it was open all the time. Like, we were constantly closing that attic door. And my grandparents always said, oh, somebody must open that door again. You know, the funny thing about the attic door is that that door is actually weighted to swing shut. So there's like the way it's put in, you push it open, it will swing shut. So there is literally no reason that door should be open on its own unless somebody opened it. But again, that one was open a lot. And we always just assumed that somebody had opened it. Looking back on that now, I know for sure that that wasn't the case all the time, because I'll go out to the farm and find that door open a lot. And I know it was shut. Then there's other times where I'll try to leave it open and it's shut. And my son stayed out there for not quite a year. After he graduated high school, he decided he was going to stay out there and take care of things for me. I think he just wanted some freedom away from mom a little bit.
I get it.
Yeah. And so he said when he first started staying there, he said he was going to keep that attic door shut. And he just couldn't keep it shut. It was constantly being opened. And so then he's like, I'll just keep it open. I'll just leave it open. And he said he couldn't keep it open. It would always be shut. And so finally he just said, you know what? You do you, and just left the door to do whatever it will.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about the Cambry House and Farm with owner Rebecca Williamson. For more information on the Cambry House and Farm, including information on paranormal investigations, events, and weddings, visit their website at cambryhouse.com. You can also get more information on their Facebook page. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts, and you can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. You'll also find everything there, all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.